Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we'll continue our dive into the Emperor's Children, starting with the outset of the Horus Heresy, into kind of about modern 40K with them. For those who are new to it, 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast focusing the lore of the 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you go to our show notes, you'll see links to our website, our YouTube channel, our Patreon, and a few other areas, namely our Discord.
Yeah. I love a few other areas. A few other areas, everyone.
Well, it's because I never know.
40K Lorecast After Dark, a few other areas.
Yeah, just some random things that are there because it's called future-proofing, Brad. It's called future-proofing. Like, we're recording this now in May 2025, but someone might be listening to this in like February 2026, and there's some different stuff there. So I'm just trying to, you know, hedge my bets. For those of you who enjoy the cast, please like and subscribe as always. Also, please join our Discord if you're looking for a place to interact. It's a completely free server with everything really 40K related. The cast obviously is a big part of it, but so is video games, literature, etc. It's designed to be a place to not only interact with us, but other people who like the cast and about topics that kind of this encompasses, the 40K universe and in all its different realms. So we have thousands of people currently in there as it is today. I think we're close to 8,000 right now with a lot of interactions. So if you're looking for a place, come on, give it a shot. Big shout out to our mods who I'll stop naming so they don't get, you know, hunted down. I'm kidding. But big shout out to our mods for all their help.
Nothing could possibly happen bad if you just keep putting out your information. It's never backfired on me.
Yeah, exactly. I should start... That'd be a fun one. On today's cast, Brad reads the personal email addresses of all the mods of Discord.
Yeah, and then I just go, what? I thought it was going to be a great idea. Yeah.
This is why people can reach out to you guys directly. Like, this is what? Am I not helping? So let's get into the cast then. Quick recap from last week. Originally known as the Third Legion, the Emperor's Children were drawn from like the nobility classes of the conquered Terra. And they function similarly in a way to the Night Houses do, focusing on martial prowess, perfection. Their goal was to show themselves to be the greatest warriors, not the greatest conquerors or any of those things, to actually be the best, the most exemplary. I would actually argue that of all of the fallen legions, they were the one that the Emperor actually liked the most. Emperor liked Horus the most, but I think he liked the Emperor's children the most of the fallen legions.
One of the biggest things is they didn't put up the biggest numbers because they were also big deal on style points. That is a real thing. They wanted to conquer perfectly with grace and style. They didn't want to be crude. Like, they really didn't like, for instance, how the Space Wolves did things or the Dark Angels, because they thought both of them were just, you know, non-precise hammers just derping about.
Yeah, exactly. So what was nice for them is that they did run into a little bit of a problem in which Trazen the Infinite stole all their gene seed. Fun story, though. But right afterwards, they found Fulgrim, their Primarch. Fulgrim, raised in a dying world, like a lot of the Primarchs were, after uplifting his world, he discovers the beauty that exists in the galaxy because he's able to, for the first time, see art, read literature, see paintings. I already said art, didn't I? But anyway, you guys get the point. Yeah, he gets all these things.
I have to say that we covered this a little bit in the last one, but Fulgrim is one of the Primarchs that, well, until he became the Fall, he actually made his planet like significantly better. He didn't just conquer.
Oh yeah, he actually improved Kamos quite a bit, as opposed to cough cough ball.
But
thanks, Sanguinius.
And the thing is until he gets corrupted too. One of the biggest things I actually like about the early stories of Fulgrim, he's into art and beauty, but also he really values artisans, people that are great at their craft, be it weapon masters, armor smiths, you know, all of these things, great builders. He has all of that, so it's not like he just has, you know, a couple guys making paintings. He had really especially on his command ship. He had everything there.
Well, that's actually that's a great transition. Another key piece of this was his best friend being Ferris Manus. So to Brad's point, it was perfection in everything. So Ferris Manus is, you know, the Primarch of making weapons, basically. I'm not sure what Vulcan does then, but that's a side note. Important part here is that Fulgrim meets Ferris Manus. They become best friends. And eventually this best friendship turns to hostility when Fulgrim turns toward Horus. At the same time, Slaanesh has been infiltrating his legion pretty aggressively and twisting and turning them into being more her things, taking their strive for perfection and kind of perverting it into a twisted, demented version of, like, first, what really is not really true beauty anymore, but just endless amounts of excess. That's how I like to look at it.
She changed us so much. Sorry, I jumped all over that, but just I think that out of the legions, I mean, you could say, you know, Mortarion and the Death Guard encompass Nurgle, but they kind of get forced on them.
Yeah.
This fall is my favorite fall because they didn't mean to go to chaos. They slowly, because of their pride and all the faults that they had, came into Slaanesh, and they just represent Slaanesh so well in the lore and in the game.
Well, and the way I like to look at it is that they moved from being obsessed with perfection to being obsessed with excess. And those are two very different things, but come from the same place. It's one became, I care about how other people view me. Another one became, I care about what I receive. And so anyway, moving quickly to the end, Istvan 3 happens. They kill half the Legion. Istvan 5 is the big one. And on Istvan 5, the traitor legions turn, finally, you know, spring the trap. And Fulgrim, the last thing he does is he and Ferris Manus have a duel. And during this duel, Fulgrim kind of kills him. And by kind of, what I mean is Fulgrim had a demon sword that he'd gotten from the lair many a while back, a fully Slaanesh corrupted Xeno race. And while standing above Ferris Manus, the demon sword itself just swung his arm because it was sick of Fulgrim's delays and cut Ferris Manus's head off. In doing so, Fulgrim stood there and saw his best friend decapitated, saw all the space marines all over the planet fighting, and became despondent. And the demon inside the sword offered him salvation. And so Fulgrim took it. And the form of salvation he got was to have the demon possess his body and Fulgrim be trapped inside the body, just screaming, trying to get out.
I would have more juice with this if this wasn't foreshadowing the first of several, basically, possessions that happen.
I'll disagree. He actually doesn't get possessed that often. He gets kind of controlled. There's only two, right?
Well, continue on. There's times when you can argue. There's a big time when we can argue when or whether he actually broke free or he got.
Yeah, there's that piece.
There's repossessed multiple times in this first deal.
Yeah.
Because he's I was good all along. We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. All right. So let's take off then. So back to today. So immediately after Istvan 5, Fulgrim returns the Vengeful Spirit and requests an audience with Horus, just the two of them. Horus is like super happy about the success. He's looking at Istvan 5 and saying, you know, this is incredible. And he's giving Fulgrim all this pride. At which point the demon who's possessing Fulgrim says to Horus, actually, I did that because Fulgrim lacked the capacity to do what was needed. But basically, don't worry, I've taken control now. And that he was in lockstep with Horus the next few plans. So Horus, this is a weird moment for Horus because he immediately recognizes what he's talking to is not Fulgrim, but it is obviously, it's the body of Fulgrim. And so of course he doesn't know anything about demonic possession. So he just asks the demon or the Fulgrim in front of him, hey, where is Fulgrim? And the demon tells him, oh, don't worry, he's trapped inside my body, and his screams of agony are actually quite fulfilling for me.
Yeah, that was not the correct answer he was going to give.
Yeah, and Horus is just staring at this because he doesn't know what to do. Because Horus, while giving himself over to chaos, doesn't really understand chaos. And so he's worried that if he just kills this thing in front of him, which he could have done easily, he'd kill Fulgrim. So he makes a vow privately, and by privately, I mean in his own head to himself. So the most private one you could possibly make, that he will free Fulgrim from this imprisonment.
Yeah, he puts that on his calendar for a future date. Also, to be fair, this is the Diet Coke version of Fulgrim. Because while being possessed, this demon is not even remotely as demon? Badass.
Oh, we'll as get Fulgrim to that. Is. Yeah, let's get there. We'll get there.
I'm saying Horus realizes this also. Not only is someone possessing his brother, and he'd like to do something about it, but this is also Diet Coke Fulgrim. So moving forward, he's like, I don't really.
What I do like is that we have a bunch of listeners who'd be like, but I like Diet Coke. Like, why does this have to be the bad version? Like, hey, I mean, I was just, because I would actually really call it the RC Cola Fulgrim, you know, because I think Diet Coke, people are like, the Diet Coke's lovely. I would probably call it RC Cola. Or what are some sodas you guys drink in Ohio?
Faygo.
No, Faygo, that's here. I, you know, all I knew about Insane Clown Posse before I moved to Michigan was Faygo soda. And then I moved here and I was like, and I go to a grocery store, and I see Faygo and I'm like, why is that in a grocery store? And my wife's like, well, of course, it's Faygo. And I'm like, oh, Insane Clown Posse must just be from here. I thought it was Insane Clown Posse's soda. I thought they made that soda. And so I walk in, so I'm in like, you know, a major grocery chain. I'm seeing a large collection of what I believed was the Insane Clown Posse soda going, did I just move to a place where everyone listens to Insane Clown Posse? This could have been interesting. So anyway. Fun side note of the day.
So many juggalos.
Yeah, won't be the last side note today. All right. So shortly after this moment, all the Primarchs who took part in the Istvan massacre joined Horus the Vengeful Spirit, and those who weren't present kind of remote in via hologram. And I do want to actually, funny joke on that. My brain, when I first read this, you know, this is many, many years ago. Now, in like, it's 2025, the thought of this happening, because when the writers were doing this hologram in, I'm sure they were thinking it was like perfect, like sci-fi holograms where like, you know, like the Magnus holograms just staying there. It's clean as hell. But I keep thinking about like a Zoom Teams or Google Meets call that we're all in where like, you know, Angron can't find the mute button. You know,
there's noise in the background.
There's just so much noise in the background. Guys, like, can someone mute Angron, please? You know, Alpharius is like, where are you exactly? Like, wouldn't be Alpharius. Sorry, it'd be Kurz. Like, Kurz, where are you? And he's like in like a duct, like sneak up the murder, or he's murdering someone. Like, you know, you're watching him actually kill somebody while on the call. Like, that's now. Thanks to the era, how I view this moment, you know, or someone's username's Assman 2000 like type thing because they didn't know how to change it because like their kid got in there ahead of time or, you know, so anyway. So the Primarchs, but the more important part of this story is all the Primarchs who are present enter the room. Lorgar is one of them. And remember, Lorgar, unlike everyone else, knows everything about everything chaos. Because he wrote the book on it.
Yeah. Hey, second to be fair of the episode, to be fair, he also wrote the book on worshiping the emperor that they still use to this day. They just
that is true. Mention. Yeah, he does have two books and like they're very different. Yeah. It's a weird dichotomy.
But I mean, he walks into the room and effectively goes, oh, look, demon possessed.
So Lorgar walks through him, looks at Fulgrim, grabs his mace, and just starts running at him to go kill him. Horus steps in between them, and Lorgar, to his credit, just goes, because Lorgar just goes, whatever, and assumes that Horus thinks he's trying to kill Fulgrim. And he doesn't, not until Horus says to him, you know, I know, leave it alone. At which point, Lorgar, to his credit, gets super pissed off and walks out of the room. And the reason he does, though, is interesting. Lorgar, you know, Lorgar loves chaos corruption, loves it more than almost any other Primarch. But what Lorgar knows is that in order to be chaos corrupted, you have to be weak. It requires a weak soul for a chaos entity to take over your body. And so his viewpoint was twofold. One, he first thought that, you know, no one's aware that we have a demon present, so I'm going to go whop that thing's butt. And then two, Fulgrim doesn't deserve to be here with us if he was able to be this easily possessed by a demon. So, but anyway, well, actually, no. So the last thing, one more thing. Lorgar then, after realizing Horus won't let him do what he wants to do, says, okay, I'm going to leave now to this is to the Fulgrim, but I'm going to go figure out your true name. And when I come back, I'm going to banish you forever.
Well, there was also a lot more of the plan coming on because Lorgar went, I'm also going to come out with a plan to backstab you eventually because I'm comically evil and wildly by far my least favorite Primarch. Continue.
It's not saying much. Well, is he really wildly your least favorite Primarch?
I don't even put him in the running. I, like when I talk about the people I don't like, I'm like, well, yeah, you don't count Lorgar.
That's fair. That's fair. You might. Lorgar is just, I like Lorgar from the plot narrative standpoint. He doesn't really, he's critical for it. Whereas like,
I mean, is he, or is Erebus?
No, Lorgar's critical. Erebus takes over a little bit more versus Jagadai Khan. If we removed all Jagadai Khan from everything that ever happened, his stories are good. I'm not saying the books aren't well written and the stories about him aren't good, but he's so non-critical in the development of the narrative.
I really want to play you with a 7th edition White Scars allied Tau detachment.
Ugh. Anyway. So, end of the conclave. Horus gives each Primarch their marching order. And each of them are basically have to go out, solidify the war effort in one way or another, and then join him for the final assault on Terra. The Emperor's children, he gave a very simple task to, because again, they're not really, don't really have a true Primarch, and he knows this. He just says, go to Mars and help the Dark Mechanicum in their war against the Mechanicum so that, you know, we solidify this base. And the demon infused Fulgrim says, yeah, absolutely, and makes zero effort to do that whatsoever.
All I have to say is, in my mind, all I saw was Guardians of the Galaxy, and Fulgrim gave the rocket wink with it. Just goes, yeah, going to Mars for sure. And he's like, you just winked at me when you did it. Yeah, I'm definitely going to Mars.
Yeah,
wink.
100% what I'm going to do.
Yeah, you're like, so you're definitely not going there. Okay, got it.
So, Demon Fulgrim decides that he wants to go to a mining world called Prismatica. Why was it called Prismatica, you ask? Because it mined a very special crystal there that was extra reflective and shiny, like a prism. Not all GW naming mechanics are winners, guys.
I mean, let's be honest, it's Prismatica 5, and at least they're not mining unobtainium.
Oh, it's okay. I mean, I'm sure this falls into the Iron Hands thing. Well, he's got hands of iron, so we'll just name ourselves that. But the reason the demon wanted to do this was it wanted to take these crystals and build a giant structure out of them because they're so reflective. It was basically a giant temple of mirrors that you could walk through for nothing but self-adoration. But as they're doing this journey, the Legion starts to get a little suspicious of their leader.
So let me side on this because the story's actually pretty cool. However, he's wildly not Fulgrim in everything that he does. And it takes them so long to recognize this. And you're just like, dude, come on, man. Like when you hover your mouse over the Fulgrim, it says clearly not Fulgrim on his title. It's just
holding down Alt so you can see all the pieces, and it's just like demon. Oh, interesting. So so his Legion starts noticing that Fulgrim's off, because normally like he's hanging out with him, he's laughing and cheering, enjoying their company. Like Fulgrim was a very active leader, probably on par with Leman Russ
He's also wildly a charismatic guy, and he wanted. He had his fingers involved in a lot of things. Remember, it wasn't just his warriors; he was involved with all the artist and the mason. You know, everybody that he had on his ship, all these people he brought, had his fingers in everything. And all of a sudden, he just didn't do any of it.
Yeah, Fulgrim now all of a sudden is like a loner. Like he's wandering around elsewhere, not interacting. And the truth, like the other one too they talked about, is he used to take a big part in all of like their traditions and all their customs. You know, like all of these guys, especially when they get uplifted off of like Kamos, and some of the ones who came from Terra, they've got these like ways that they have, like big meals and all that stuff. Fulgrim won't take part in them because, of course, the demon doesn't know them. When the demon possessed Fulgrim, it didn't take over his mind. It did the inverse. It just took the body and shoved his mind, his thoughts down in to look out.
It's kind of my thing if they don't recognize it, because he's just going, hello, random citizen, as he's walking down the halls. And I'm like,
it's like those comedies where the aliens are trying to act as people. It's like, hello, fellow earthling. Like, what are we doing?
In my mind, he's just got the Steve Buscemi Hello, fellow students. You're like, so like everybody realized that's not Fulgrim, right, guys? Okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
The last little piece that kind of starts pushing it over the edge, he gets really short-tempered with his legion, and which he's never been before. Like Fulgrim would always, because he wasn't one to scold or criticize, because he was a noble. He would inform them of any mistake they made, but his goal was to show them his superiority by saying, this is what you did wrong. Here's what I would have done. You should have been trying to do it that way. Said Fulgrim's just a dick. He's just yelling at people, screaming at them. And
he's probably, let's go a little bit farther. He was a dick, but he was a tyrant dick. He was starting to lord over people, not in a noble way, in a, I'm a warlord and I've grabbed power and you should all be subservient.
Yeah, and I think where this really came to a big head, get it in a second, is when Lord Commander Eidolon, one of his top Lord Commanders, starts protesting when they're on Prismatica, saying, we were told to go to Mars. We're nowhere near Mars. What are you doing? Like, we shouldn't be here. We need to go help the war effort. And Fulgrim starts screaming at him, accusing him of mocking him and challenging his knowledge and his this. And Eidolon starts backing down pretty quickly, like, whoa, what the hell? And then Fulgrim cuts his head off and then holds his head above a bunch of wine. And then everyone drinks the wine, which is just weird.
Current Emperor's
this
children.
Is weird now. Weird now.
Once we get down the road, like, you would be like, I can't believe they did that. And right now they'd be like, why? Because it's so lame and not even a big deal.
Yeah. in like 7 years, this is going to be like total normal. Fun note though, on Eidolon, he did, after cutting his head off, make Fabius Bile sew it back on and reanimate him. And then Eidolon's a weird character. We're actually not going to talk about him very much because he's a very strange character in 40K lore, because he kind of moves all over the place in power and knowledge. Because at some point,
let's be honest, he got written by multiple authors. That's why, too.
Yeah, and so some authors' version of Eidolon post having his head cut off was no change, and some of them were like, "Oh, he's basically like
a person." Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Lucius though starts noticing the Primarch's really different, and he starts being a bit more strategic at it. Lucius's big thing was that he started beating the Primarch when they were dueling. And like, Lucius is the best swordsman in the Legion.
Punking him too.
Yeah, but that's the point. But Fulgrim used to beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, because he's Lucius like Primarch.
Lucius is dancing around and playing with him to a point where Lucius starts getting concerned he's going to injure the Primarch in sparring. That level. Around the same time, Lucius starts having these dreams showing the Primarch trapped in a painting. So he decides, he gets a few of them together, of his brothers together, and they capture Fulgrim and knock him out. Also,
this plan is horrific. Because he's like, again, the Diet Coke of Fulgrim, it works, but like,
RC Cola, stop. Fine. Lots of people drink Diet Coke. You drink Diet Pepsi and you're like, oh, it's the Diet Pepsi. Dr. Pepper. I drink Diet Dr. Dude, Pepper.
This is from Dr. Evil. He calls him Diet Coke of Evil. Come on.
I know that, but I'm just still giving you the whole, like, let's call it what it really is.
But RC I'm Cola. Just saying that, like, this plan is terrible.
Yeah.
Like,
it makes no sense.
Yeah. He's like, hey, man, let's get like two or three of us. You're like, shouldn't Fulgrim just completely wreck us when we try to jump on his back like children getting on dad? Yep. You're like, yeah, 100%. But they instantly knock him out.
Yeah, like it's with nothing. And they take him to Fabius Bile. And Fabius Bile has this great plan. And we're going to cover Fabius Bile later in this cast. But Fabius Bile's plan is, of course, simply, let's just torture him until it gets better. That's his whole plan. As they begin the torture, Fulgrim just goes, no, guys, it's cool. It's me, Fulgrim. Don't worry about it. And he informs them all that he actually freed himself a while ago. And he used all this knowledge to banish the demon inside him into the painting. And what Lucius's dreams were about was actually the demon in the painting trying to trick all of them to knock Fulgrim out so that the demon could repossess him.
No.
To Brett's point, this makes absolutely no sense. Fulgrim's words. I think any one of us who's read this book and read this story goes, so basically the torture worked perfectly. The demon got upset. You repossessed it. But rather than say, hey, thanks, guys, for saving me because I gave my soul over to a demon, you had to go with, I was in control the whole time. Really? Yes. Then why are we on Prismatica 5?
Exactly. Like, 100% he did not gain control and do his stuff. You were sad you got possessed. Just say thank you to your most loyal of people in your legion and embrace it instead of going, dudes, I already was escaped. I'm fine. It's a master plan. You're like, no, it's not.
No, you're an idiot. So at this point, Fulgrim retakes control of his legion and they begin sort of doing weird stuff, to say the least.
Sort of? Now, Emperor's Children fans, I know I'm shitting all over Fulgrim when he's doing this. However, that was a terrible plan and a bad story you're telling. His next plan is actually legit. He's got layers on layers of this plan. It works really well.
This one does work, actually works perfectly, if I'm being honest. So, Pederabo. So, Pederabo, Primarch of the Iron Warriors, was kind of always the odd man out in this traitor campaign. He just wanted to go stick it to Rogel Dorne. Yep. All of the other ones, Conrad Kurz, of course, chaos. Angron, of course, chaos. Mortarion, it was a bit more of a tragic story, but chaos. Same with Magnus, chaos. Lorgar, chaos. Yeah. Am I missing anyone now? Yeah, Horus, obviously, chaos. I think that's all of them, right? Right? Didn't miss any. Yeah, that's all of them. Pederabo's the weird one. And so Pederabo's kind of like just actually taking this revolution seriously. He's like, we're gonna wage a war campaign, do all this stuff. But Pederabo also does have a little bit of an inferiority complex within all these legions. Oh, sorry, I forgot about Alpha Legion. Sorry. Also, Alpha Legion is Alpha Legion. Like, they weren't a Chaos Legion. They were just a, like, independent.
They were neutral. They were a gray Jedi.
Yeah. So anyway, Fulgrim goes to Pederabo and says, hey, I got some good news for you. I've got a way to actually make you guys, you and your legions, perfect. You'll never lose. You'll never fail. You know, basically, you'll stop being second fiddle to everybody else. Just come join me because there's a special weapon within the Eye of Terror called the Angel Exterminatus. Help me get this weapon and we can power our legions to a level no one's ever seen before. So Pederabo, because he's an idiot, says yes. They travel to an Eldar crone world that was destroyed during the creation of Slaanesh. Fun important notes, could jump up later. They're being pursued this whole time by a group of survivors of Istvan V, which there's more survivors of Istvan V than you'd expect. But anyway, on a ship called the Sisyphium, which was just Astartes who were on a... We covered this, by the way, guys, I should mention. Some of the stuff we're going to cover, we covered in like episode 3 or 4, but I'm not going to sit there in episode 86 and say, as you remember, an episode that came out a year and a half ago.
Yeah. I would definitely do that, though.
Yeah. I should mention. Guys, we're going to recap some stuff pretty quickly. I'm keeping it shorter, but just letting you, we're going to recap some stuff so people don't have to go and listen back to an episode from like a year and a half ago where I didn't like the audio as much. Anyway, so this other group of Astartes are on a suicide mission. There's a band called Suicide Machine.
Nope. Keeping it Suicide Machine, baby. No.
These guys are on a suicide machine to get... Damn it.
I've got it, John. Everybody aboard Sisyphus was on a suicide mission to get revenge.
The
ship was on a suicide machine.
So upon reaching the crone world, the planet is vacant. Pederabo immediately is suspicious and starts moving forward really slowly, like basically trying to fortify his position as they're going, because he knows that this shouldn't be vacant. As soon as they breach the innermost inner sanctum, the Eldar protectors wake up. And this is one thing that happened in a lot of crone worlds. Any sort of spirit hosts that were there, they were all incredibly dormant. But should they detect Slaanesh, they would wake up and attack in order to protect whatever relics they had there. So out of nowhere, they're under, both Pederabo, his legion, Fulgrim and his legion are under attack. It was not the full legions with them, obviously, but a large number of them are under massive attack from some pretty heavy-duty Eldar at this point, too, because these are all very motivated spirit hosts.
Go back to what happened before they went down, because this is so comically awesome on this.
Ben Rob was an idiot.
I made something for you. Just wear this.
Well, it's just random too. So fine. Before they go down to the planet, Fulgrim walks up to Pederabo and, you know, says, "I gave you a gift," which I assume came off with the skill of, "Hey, I made you this, wear it." And it was a cloak with a special stone in it called the Malgater Stone. And of course, Pederabo puts it on. The stone is not decorative at all. It's instead meant to sap the life and energy out of Pederabo and transfer it over to Fulgrim.
In my mind, there's just an actual visual, like, tether going straight to Fulgrim from him.
Well, and what's interesting is they talk about the entire time they're together, Pederabo notices that Fulgrim and his legion look odd. The term they use is like they were sweating light. They were just, it was energy, like, or light kind of just shining off all of them. It looked weird to him. It probably was the stone he was wearing, sucking his life force out. Yes. He's watching it go into them. So Pederabo doesn't fully trust Fulgrim. I mean, he trusts him enough to put on the cloak he gave him and keep following.
And go into a dark alley with him.
Yeah.
"Hey, man, meet me behind the building in the alley. Don't worry. Also, wear this when you go back there.
And could you hop in that ice bath right there and just keep your kidneys cold?" Yeah. All right. So out of nowhere, of course, Fulgrim attacks Pederabo. And with his life force just sucked from him, Fulgrim starts beating the ever-living hell out of Pederabo and knocks him to the ground. Fulgrim tells Pederabo that the weapon he's searching for is actually himself, Fulgrim. And he was going to ascend to a perfect being by using Pederabo to get him there. So Fulgrim...
It's kind of a cool speech, by the way.
It's a good speech. Pederabo is not about that and decides to use his remaining strength to stand up and confront Fulgrim. And he takes off the cloak and his gift and throws it across the room. That was his great move. Yeah. Anyway, at the exact same time, the Sisyphean crew attack. They basically let Fulgrim and Pederabo take a little bit of a beating from the Eldar, and they shoot, and they kind of swoop in to kill as many of these traitor Astartes as they possibly can. One of them, though, while standing there shooting around, looks down and sees the Malgatar stone just kind of there on the ground and decides just to shoot it. For no real reason, just sees a glowing rock and shoots it.
I'm getting my chi together here because I'm going to rage just a second. Just a tiny one. Why is the soul-sucking gem made of cheap glass?
Yeah.
It takes one bolter shot. And he destroys this soul-sucking stone. Really? It's just completely...
I have another piece of that. So couldn't Pederabo have just broken it in his hand?
He might have accidentally broken it with his hand.
Yeah, we threw it across the room. Yeah, yeah. If he threw it against a wall, it would have shattered. So anyway, that happens. And suddenly, it's weird. Apparently, the energy transfer to Fulgrim wasn't permanent. So as soon as the stone breaks, all the energy comes out of Fulgrim and goes right back into Pederabo. And Pederabo gets up, picks up his warhammer, and just decides to beat Fulgrim to death. And he does. He actually kills Fulgrim with his warhammer, sort of.
Yeah. Well, this is where I think it's a cool plan, though, because this was Fulgrim wanted the entire time. But he had to be here. I think he had to have that much power juiced up in this place for his ritual, because he ascends into a demon primarch. He jumps up, transformed into what he is now, a four-arm purple snake that looks amazing on the table. It's pretty cool. But he shows up in his new form, and that's what he wanted to be in the first place. He needed this. He needed his old body to be struck down. He needed to be here with the power. This is all ritualistic on this.
Yeah, it's the way it's described is that he shed his mortal shell, because he became... Now, don't forget, the Lair, who were the ones who corrupted him in the first place, were a reptilian race. Almost like Fulgrim now has become a Lair. He is now a reptile. He has shed his skin, and now he is a new version of himself. So upon achieving this goal, quick little side note, Fulgrim just teleports out. Him and his entire legion go deuces and disappear. Pederabo can't do that. He has to flee. And to Pederabo's credit, as they're trying to flee, this whole planet turns into a black hole. Oh. And he can't escape the gravity of the black hole. So he says, Iron Warriors never move backwards. They always move forward. And he turns his fleet around and shoots itself into the black hole. And then obviously he doesn't die here. So it's a good move. But I also want to point out that the next time Petrobo sees Fulgrim, he doesn't beat the ever-living hell out of him. He just sees him, like, later, they're on the Bridge of the Vengeful Spirit together, and Petrobo doesn't just pick up a Thunder Hammer and beat the hell out of Fulgrim.
I mean, to be fair, he is a giant forearm lizard now, and Petrobo has not ascended at this point in time either.
I mean, he's still worth, I don't know. There's a level of, like, have some dignity.
I mean, also, Fulgrim could have been like, hey, man, don't make it weird. Just let it happen.
Oh, I'm sure it's what Fulgrim's thing. Like, hey, man, come on. That was like 6 months ago. I don't know why you're still upset about it.
You got to bring up old shit.
Exactly. So after shedding his mortal form and ascending, Fulgrim goes into the warp to join up with the forces of Slaanesh inside. He pops out of the warp for like little kind of events, but they're really all anticlimactic events that are done for, is more for the writers to kind of show how much power Fulgrim had gotten. So when I call it anticlimactic, what I mean is, like, for example, he's doing a battle with, I want to say it was the, was it, no, it, it was actually the Salamanders. And in this battle, he actually blows up a Thunderhawk with his psychic powers. He was never that psychically power before. The House Knights of Davin, who were, it was a night world. He actually corrupted all of them to being agents of Slaanesh. So he does a lot of these little things, but they were all like not like critical to the war effort. Like those things never happened in the story; it wouldn't matter. They're written as a way. If you're reading the novel Fulgrim, which is a good novel, and some of the other ones that he just appears in, you just see how much power he gains from being this close to Slaanesh. But there is one pretty big one he's part of, and this involves Lorgar. So,
hold on. Let's give this a little thing of why it's set up. Hey, all this stuff that Fulgrim's doing, Horus not super cool with it, since he went, hey man, go over here, and he went, yeah, got it, and then did everything but go over there.
That's a fun part. So the Horus heresy lasts, I believe, 7 years, correct?
Yeah.
In 7 years, on like day five of the Horus heresy, Horus told Fulgrim to go to Mars. Fulgrim never goes to Mars, ever.
Not one.
In fact, I actually not aware. Correct me, guys. Feel free to correct me and come to Discord. Correct me. I'm not aware of Fulgrim ever going to Mars in the history of Warhammer. I don't think he's ever even been there.
He drove by it. He saw it.
I don't think he's ever been to Mars. Anyway, just a funny note on that one.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress. Delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
So Horus is getting pissed and just says, someone go get Fulgrim. And Lorgar, being the most apt to chaos, knows where he is and says, I'll go get him. I know where he's at. And Lorgar goes to basically what is effectively the den of Slaanesh and finds Fulgrim there, happy as a clam, and explains to him, hey, Horus says you got to go. You know, basically anyone who has a kid, it's the, hey, it's time for bed. Let's go. And Fulgrim just goes, nah.
I'm not tired, Dad.
I'm not tired. This is, and actually, to its credit, Fulgrim literally calls the Horus heresy boring.
Boring.
which I love that his move. Like, yeah, nah, I'm not about that boring stuff. Because instead of, to be fair, as you love to say, Fulgrim's having the time of his life. He is over in, he's learned about the great game, which is like the endless war between the gods of chaos. And he is on Team Slaanesh having a party. He is, you know, taking land and messing with stuff. He's causing nothing but problems for the other Chaos Gods. And in return, Slaanesh is giving him anything and everything he could ever want. You know, just name it, I'll create it for you. This is awesome. Way better than going back into the Materium and having like fight space marines. That crap sucks. So he goes, no, and tells Lorgar to piss off, lest he has to taunt him a second time. But Lorgar actually wasn't there to do Horus's bidding. He was there to enact his own plan. And the plan he wanted to enact was actually to kill Horus and supplant him with himself. More on that in a second. So while Fulgrim's waxing and waning about like how boring the Materium is and how he doesn't want to go anywhere, Lorgar's associate, Laek, sneaks up and speaks Fulgrim's true demon name.
Demon name. Now, my favorite part about this, and I'm going to call you out because I love it. I love the fact that you said associate, like he's like a junior executive in the law firm. All I'm going to have here is Ted.
That's a very good point. I do write these notes like either before work or after work. And unfortunately, you are dead right on that one. Because that's how I write. Because at work, I will use those terms. And so I'm like, oh, yeah, it's his associate. Yeah, of course. Yeah, fine. Anyway. But yeah, so Laek does this. And in some ways, he doesn't really possess Fulgrim. But he now gains full control of Fulgrim. Fulgrim is enslaved to him.
Yeah. Well, again.
Of course. So Fulgrim snaps to, and him and his entire legion go to the meeting, which is on Ulanor. Ulanor is going to be the great staging ground for the final assault on Terra. Once there, Lorgar's plan was to have Laek order Fulgrim to surprise attack Horus from behind and kill him, because then the Chaos Gods would choose Lorgar to be the champion.
There's a small problem with this in his logic, and that problem is Lorgar sucks a tornado.
Yeah.
No one was ever going to do this. Yeah. No, he literally goes taking over from Horus, and everybody went, seriously, dude. I mean, like
you're not even the top.
We're super busy here. Like, we're not even acknowledging that you're doing this.
There are eight of us on this team, and you don't make the top 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, whatever, but what ends up happening is that Laek knew this plan was a terrible idea and didn't want to get murdered by Horus. So Laek had released Fulgrim like weeks ago at this point.
Like as soon as they went into the Materium.
Yeah.
They were like, hey man, you still got to go back to Horus, but see you later.
So Lorgar launches his great plan and Fulgrim just basically stands there and waves at him like, no. And I think Laek may have given him the middle finger. And then a very, very angry Horus beats the ever-living
out of Lorgar. He puts seven different finishing moves. There's an RKO out of nowhere. An old Hogan leg drop. I mean, he's pummeling him.
Yeah.
I mean, Lorgar's probably 19th out of the 18 Primarchs in hand-to-hand ability, and he's facing prime, juiced-up Horus.
It doesn't go well. Lord, to his credit, Horus doesn't kill him. He just banishes him, which I did like because Lorgar then gets banished. So he turns to his legion, says, okay, we're out of here, guys. And the entire legion just turn and point at Erebus and say, no, we're going to hang out with him instead. So Lorgar has to go into the warp by himself. I think his dad even stayed behind, right? Because Cor Farron even was like, no, I'm out.
And Erebus is just twisting his comically evil mustache.
So Fulgrim, like,
how did you not see this one? Lorgar literally sent him to all of the planets with plans to do stuff, and he didn't see this one?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's Lorgar. So now let's go to the Siege of Terra. And this is a fun one to me, because by the time they get to the Siege of Terra, the Emperor's children are a tactically useless army.
No. They were worse than tactically useless, because they actually interfere with the plans.
Yeah.
And eventually just let's attack have some fun. The mall.
Yeah. So. Well, let's get there in a minute. But the first part's the best. So the first thing that happens is Fulgrim is on the bridge of the Vengeful Spirit with everybody else. And he's just bored. That's what he is. He finds this entire thing boring. But he looks over and he sees that Angron is losing his mind over not being the first one down and being able to fight. And just goes, well, this could be fun, and wanders over to Angron or slithers over to Angron and starts talking to him about all the glory and combat he's missing out. And McMahon is it basically saying things like, oh, is it because you and your legion would suck at this? And so, but luckily, you know, the Night Lords are down there, you know, and oh, look, the Death Guard are really doing great. Good for Mortarion. I'm so happy that he's down there doing this, because if we'd sent you, there's no way it would have succeeded. And Angron. Well, also,
yeah. You remember he gave him the actual line of, don't worry, those legions are basking in the glory of this initial.
Yes. Oh, I forgot about that part. Yeah. And Angron, he does this until Angron gets so upset, he starts ripping apart his own ship and destroying the ship, to which point they have to take Angron and shove him over into Conrad Kurz's secret labyrinth in his ship, which he also pseudo destroys, by the way. Angron.
He really didn't pseudo destroy it. He did wreck it.
Yeah. I mean, I think like Angron took this can of soda and shook it to the highest level it possibly could be shook. The next part, though, is that once that happens, he's still bored. So Fulgrim slithers over to Pederabo, who's there overseeing the entire battle plan, and decides to bother him and just starts asking him about, like, why are you resisting all the gifts of chaos? And starts just showing off all the cool things he has. Like, literally showing off, like, he's like shadow boxing and doing karate and yelling, hey, Pederabo, check this out. I can also do this now. Oh, and check this out. Look, I can do 2 backflips now. Like, this is the, or holding up his sword, saying, look how shiny my sword is. You could have a shiny sword too. Just join chaos. Useless crap. And everyone finally just has enough.
I like the best, in my mind though, Pederabo has like 700 screens up that he's giving information.
Yeah.
And giving information, you know, giving different tactics to each and every one. And the entire time, Fulgrim's behind him, just poking him, going, dude, but seriously, I could throw this ball over those mountains over there.
Yeah. I have a young child. I've had tried to have conversations when he needs to tell me something. That was what the writers, when they wrote this, that writer had a child. Had a young child or had multiple young children, in a sense, what it's like when they want to tell you something. That's exactly how I view Fulgrim at this point. So eventually, everyone just says, that's it, get him out of here. And they tell him, all right, Fulgrim, Emperor's children, your turn to go. Go down there and lay siege to the castle, which they promptly do, not even in the slightest. They just, they land, look at the giant wall filled with guns, Primarchs, force fields, and other stuff, and just go, nah, and walk the other direction into the horde of unprotected human beings.
You have to use what I always use when I'm describing this. Everybody was attacking the most fortified place in the galaxy, and the Emperor's children invaded the gap. Yeah. They basically went to the mall with people folding shirts, and they just went, why are you here? And went, sucks to be you.
Yeah. I mean, you had the entire populace of Earth, but there's a massive populace who are surrounding, you know, the Emperor's castle. And their solution was like, oh crap, there's a giant war over there. Let's all just go this other way. And they all went that way. Like, hey, it's kind of nice over here. You know, right, there's orbital bombardments happening, but it looks like these guys really just care about that Emperor, dude. Let's just keep going this way. And suddenly 100,000+ space marines come roaring at them, screaming with chainswords and everything else, ready to do some hardcore killing. So the cities of Terra at this point start to resemble like the Eldar worlds just before the fall, but with demons added to it. There is torture, mutilation, terror are just unleashed as population. The Emperor's children do so much of this that it actually creates a gap in reality where demons, demonettes primarily, burst through and become present on Terra for the first time in history. Their descent into this depravity did get stalled momentarily because Abaddon, with resurrected Eidolon, convinces Fulgrim to go back to the actual battle and fight so Abaddon and his crew could sneak in below. You know, we talked about this in the Siege of Terra. Fails miserably, by the way. Fulgrim.
He was there.
Yeah. Well, because Fulgrim originally was like, no, this is more fun. But they inform him the place they're going to go do battle is where Rogel Dorn is. And that was a duel that Fulgrim wanted. Because Rogel probably of the Primarchs there, it's Rogal and Sanguinius were the two best fighters. And Fulgrim wants some of each of them, actually. So, cool thing about this story, this is actually one of the ones I liked a lot. Fulgrim, for this, takes his legion back and actually turns himself back into human form. He's not a snake when he fights Rogal. And this is, I expect, because he wanted Dorne to lose to the lesser version of himself. Problem for Fulgrim, Dorne can throw down, guys.
Dorne is a badass.
Yeah. Don't worry, guys. We're getting close to a cast where Brad's got to accept the fact that Dorne is one of the best fighters of all the Primarchs. It's just true. So they go back to the gate. They're fighting. Dorne obviously does appear. Should have mentioned that. And these two start having a duel.
Here's the throw it down on this, because it's a big deal. I say big deal too much. But whatever. I'm never going to change. Dorne's winning this fight, but Fulgrim, again, his Primarch power is regeneration.
Well, demon Primarch power. He always had it, but with a demon Primarch, it's almost grotesque.
Right. He's just insta-regenerating everything that's happening to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Dorne is wrecking him, actually. I mean, cutting big holes in him, blasting, doing a lot of damage, but every single time, it just instantly heals. But the flip side is Fulgrim can't seem to harm Dorne back because Dorne is that bad of a fighter. I also want to point out Dorne had, like, I don't know, 20 hours earlier, single-handed a greater demon by himself. So, you know, up in space. So they're at a standstill. But while this is happening, Abaddon's secret plan of attacking under the fortress discovers it was a trap the entire time, and it fails miserably. Yeah. And so Fulgrim, because of his psychic powers, detects this and goes, oh, so this battle's not going to end. All right, we're going back to the pile, guys. And just, it actually gives Dorne the middle finger and leaves. Like, in the middle of their duel, he sends a few guys in to kill Dorne, who Dorne wrecks, by the way. And then him and his legion go back to the civilian population and just start grabbing every single person they can and loading them onto their ships. And head back to the
millions.
Easily millions. And by the way, he does this well before the Emperor jumps the vengeful spirit. The Emperor's children just go out. Like, we're good. We're going to get our own thing. And they all leave.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's recap that, though. So how much did you help the Siege of Terra? And you're like, negative 40. Because you screwed up the plans. You didn't follow anything.
He did more for the Siege of Terra than Jakadai Khan did. Jakadai Khan, remember?
It's true.
You remember Jakadai Khan was standing on the fortress, and everyone said, "Just stand here, we've got this." And he went, "What if instead of standing behind the force field, me and all my buddies run out through a gate to go fight?" I think it was Mortarion at the time. Yeah. Only to get our asses kicked so bad that Sanguinius has to fly down from the gate and pick me up and bring me back, but all my dudes still died. That was better for the traitor forces than all of Fulgrim did combined. Anyway, jumping forward. The next stage kind of in the Emperor's Children's story is about a couple hundred years after the Siege of Terra. All the traitor legions eventually end up back in the Eye of Terror. And once they get there, a new thing begins called the Legion Wars. And this is because the legions, as they're, you know, no one really wants to go back to the Eye of Terror except for a couple of them. Most of them just, there's nowhere else to go, though. They're being pursued. At this point, the Ultramarines, the Space Wolves,
and the Dark Angels
are at full strength, by the way, and are just hunting them down. So there's really nowhere to go but the one place those guys can't go. So they all end up there. When they get there, though, they're pretty badly beaten up. They've lost really a lot of their ability. Like, you know, there are no cloning worlds anymore. They're pretty jacked up. So they begin having, like you'd expect, an internal war over power and resources. And this is known as the Legion Wars. You know, loot equipment, get slaves, whatever you can do. The issue, though, initially, is that the Emperor's children are not beaten and broken at all. they're full actually strength. Yeah, total full strength, because they just bailed. They're like, yeah, we're just going to grab all these things. And so while the other legions were fighting the Emperor's legion were conquering. So all these legions then get back and discover pretty quickly, oh crap, I now have to fight other traitor legions, and one of them is grossly overpowered.
Yep.
But good news is jealousy and envy are the key parts of the Emperor's legion at this point. Of the Emperor's children at this point. So while they had the most slaves, the most resources, the most everything, they were the least unified of the traitor legions, except for maybe the World Eaters at this stage.
Karn breakup, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. We're going to cover that later, guys, but that's the only one I could see. And so an interesting thing happens in the warp at this point. The Legion Wars begin in earnest, and what happens is a lot of the legions who can kind of sequester themselves into the pockets of the warp that are most protected by their gods. You know, the Death Guard guys go to where Nurgle is, World Eaters to Khorne, Thousands to Tzeentch. This kept them a little bit safe, but not massively.
And it's a big deal in this, though, because of the fact that when you're in the full zone of your god's area, you were so much more powerful. So, like, these wars were kind of handled in the neutral zones most of the time.
That's a great point. Yeah, because if you tried to pursue me, if you're powered by Khorne and you pursue me into, like, the realm of Tzeentch, not only does Khorne's power stop affecting you, so your power level goes down, but my power goes up because I'm close to Tzeentch. So you can't actually come into those regions. But during this time, the interesting thing is this actually becomes the second founding of the Chaos Space Marines.
Accidentally, because what you have is a whole bunch of Chaos Lords and Demon Princes start to just get warbands.
Yep.
Also, the old rules for creating a warband were fantastic. This is 20 years ago, but whatever.
Yeah.
But that you start to form these warbands. And they, kind of like when we did the Rogue Trader, there's a huge difference between some of the warbands. Some of the warbands were, you know, eight not dudes. Very much stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was Sean, and others, Eric, Mike, and Bob. Like, oh, okay, well, they're over. It's like a high school clique. They're like, yeah, you guys, yeah, we're going to be best buds for life. Like, yeah, your life's going to be over in like 3 weeks, dude, because there's a real group coming.
And others are just gigantic. They're legion-esque size, you know what I mean? Because they're getting all these. Because, again, we still have the traitor guardsmen and everything else. You had all this that they're kind of just absorbing, depending on where they're going.
Yeah, and it's a super – I think it's a really cool era, because what you do get is it becomes the chaos, like, war bands become, like pluralities. It's whatever – whoever can bring the most success, whoever is the best leader, is the best this – begins to grow and grow and grow, because this is you know, true anarchy they're living in. So whoever can provide the most and most success wins, until someone, of course, unseats them. And some legions come out of this decently okay, because they happen to have one or two leaders within their legion who have such a powerful cult of personality that they can raise massive people behind them. Typhus is a really good, we cover this with Typhus, really good example. Like, effectively the entirety of the Death Guard got in line behind Typhus. Abaddon, once he finished his little sulking pilgrimage, obviously completely turns around, but not only, actually Abaddon's the most extreme example. He not only converts over his legion, what was left of it, but other people then convert from their legions to his legion. Ahriman for some people, but again, big following. That being said, the Emperor's children didn't have that. They only really had a couple leaders. Fulgrim is completely out of the picture at this point. He couldn't be happier. He's back. He's hanging out with Slaanesh and her greater demons, and he is just absolutely the. I think for this moment in time, in the entirety of the Materium, the Immaterium, there was no one happier than Fulgrim. This was the best thing that ever happened to him. A1 plus. It was like when Gilliman got the newest version of Excel. so he just says his legion, I'm just like, you guys can go, you know, F off.
And everybody gets super, this is where they start getting super focused on the thing that makes them who they are.
Yeah.
So they just start ignoring everything else.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is over time, the small war bands, if you don't have that cult of personality leader, you just died, because you'd do a raid campaign into someone And then that person would either come get revenge, or another larger group would see you do it and would come counterattack you. So what the Drukhari deal with all the time. But remember, the Drukhari are immortal. These guys are not. So it creates a little bit of a problem. And the Drukhari also may have cloning technology. So they're in a bit, they're a bit better spot.
It's crazy because the Emperor's Children go from the most powerful to smaller bands, and a lot of them got killed. But the guys that were left, had some super powered.
Well, and we're going to get there in a minute, because one thing I realized, we just skipped over it. It's my mistake. So the reason that the Emperor's Children fell off is actually a very funny story. They came in and they got, remember, as we said, they had all these slaves, they had all this power. Over the course of the Legion Wars, they just used them all up. Like they're sitting there thinking, hey, we've got, 10 billion slaves. And you fast forward like 100 years, like, hey, what happened to all your slaves? Oh, we tortured and murdered all of them. Does anyone know where we can get 100 billion new ones? Like, no, man. Like, ration. What's going on here? So anyway, so that's what happened there. So they become actually around early 8th edition writing. I think they were the smallest Chaos Legion.
Kind of, because they got really banded up. I mean, you could go into World Eaters on that because they were super war banded. But the thing is that when World Eaters broke up, they just joined other war bands. The Zerkers and stuff did.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening, the Emperor's Children war bands are actually interesting to me, because they're not the same as everyone else. Every other Chaos war band, or at this point, I mean, they're really more factions than some of the bigger ones. They're trying to achieve things. They're saying, all right, we're gonna conquer land. We're going to, or I'm going to do something for my, I'm going to go spread plague. I'm going to do, Zinchi things. I'm trying to uncover the mysteries of the galaxy. They all seem to be very interested in doing things that had like longer term goals. The Emperor's Children ones were mostly short-term goals.
The Chaos God of excess, but also basically immediate gratification? Yeah. They didn't have long-range goals? What? That seems crazy, John.
It's all they were doing was just like, hey, let's just have these like horrifying actions towards Slaanesh. Gladiatorial pits, pain and torture centers. Basically, it's the Drukhari. I mean, that's what they built. It was effectively Kamra.
100%.
With more Kamra.
Well, also, you're real bummed, as always, when you aren't allowed to die because the laws of physics don't apply here in the warp. And you're like, hey, man, it would be cool if I didn't get horribly murdered every day.
That's fair.
And then somehow I'm not dead.
That's actually a good point. So, but let's talk into a couple of the key ones here who did rise a legion. And the first one we'll do is Lucius. Lucius probably I think he's the oldest modeled character for Emperor's Children, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So Lucius the Eternal, as an Emperor's Children, the original, was a garbage leader. Didn't really care about the success of his legion, only his own personal glory. As a Slaanesh leader of the Emperor's Children, he's the best thing ever. And Lucius and his warband become focused in one thing and one thing only, and that's bloodletting. They would descend upon worlds, usually in the Materium, not to capture, but to just slaughter. They would make planetfall and just start killing anything and everything they could find until, just like we talked about on Terra, they killed enough that demonets of Slaanesh would burst out of just piles of bodies and would join in the slaughter until the entire planet has been murdered. At which point they weren't done. Then they would build gladiatorial pits and have internal fights, either Emperor's Children on Emperor's Children, Emperor's Children versus demons, demon versus demon. It was just a party, and that's how it was.
Threw a rave in a gladiatorial pit.
Yeah. Lucius, this was his jam. He couldn't have been happier, because first he's just ripping through people, yelling his kill count out as he's just tearing down the street. And then afterwards, he's just seeing, all right, who wants some, and stands in the middle of a gladiator pit, seeing how many people are demons he can lop their heads off of. And Chaos is loving him. The stories are the demons from inside the warp. It was kind of like watching primetime sports, seeing Lucius play. So they're just cheering him on. They're super into him. especially, by the way, Slaanesh herself. But as we've said before, the Emperor's children now are full of jealousy. Other Lord Commanders within it don't like how popular Lucius is. And they just, and one of them named Sirius Black.
Cyrus.
Yeah. Is it Cyrus? Yeah. Cyrus decides, I am sick of everyone talking about how great Lucius is. Watch this. So he challenges Lucius to a fight. And Cyrus kills him. It just beats the crap out of him. The whole time they're fighting, Lucius, for some reason, doesn't take it seriously. And he's giggling while Cyrus is actually landing some pretty heavy blows on him. At the end of the fight, and I'm sorry to kind of ruin this part, but I can't tell you the story without giving away this really cool part of this fight. At the end of the fight, Lucius decides to unveil his secret weapon, which is a like spinning double backflip stab to face attack. That's what it was. He's like, you know, it's like if you guys ever, man, we're old, but it used to be with a lot of like fighting games, there were combos you could put into the controller that were just unblockable. And people who knew how to do those would actually mess with you and let you kind of beat them down like less than like 30% health. And they would just, all you just hear is them clip a bunch of buttons together suddenly. And then you got just wrecked. What was the game on Neo Geo?
So many of them. Killer Instinct.
Killer Instinct. That was it. Killer Instinct was the worst for combos.
Ultra combo.
Yeah. Ugh. So he decides to break out his Killer Instinct combo. And as he's about to land it, Cyrus grabs him by the throat in midair, throws him into the ground, and is described as he beat his body so badly there was nothing left but just blood in the sand.
Wait for it. Combo breaker.
We are old. So many of our listeners have no idea. They have to look up YouTube videos to see what the hell we're talking about. Anyway.
Well, this is awesome because, well, things are going to go badly because there's a thing called the Armor Souls that we're going to talk about in a minute here.
Yeah. So afterwards, Cyrus actually, he does get some praise, but he falls really ill pretty quickly. And over a few weeks, like all of his hair starts to fall out in clumps. His eyes change color. His skin starts to look dead. Even the armor that he wears begins to change. He used to have an armor that was like, you know, adorned with like symbols and stuff. Now it looks like demons laughing is all you see on his armor. And the last thing that happens to him is he starts to notice these dark lines appearing all over his skin, all over his body, everywhere. And eventually those dark lines become scars head to toe. And he begins screaming out in agony. It's kind of like the last night, screaming and screaming. And over the course of the evening, his screams turn into laughter. And finally, the laughter stops. And from where he was, out walks Lucius. Because Slaanesh was not willing to lose such a great toy. So she resurrected Lucius in Cyrus's
body. And the best part about it is this keeps, he has everyone that he'll eventually do. He does this to his opponents,
yeah.
And they become part of his armor, screaming forever trapped into the armor.
So it's actually, Lucius to me is the one of the coolest characters of all of Chaos because of this. Because, yeah, you can't kill him. Well, you can kill him, but if you kill him, you curse yourself. And I want to point out, there's a Necron this happened to. There was a Necron warrior, I think, or a Necron something that killed Lucius with a phase blade. That Necron's necrodermis actually melted away and a very happy Lucius just stood up from inside of it.
Oh, that's what, this is one of the things I want animated because Lucius's armor is constant moving, screaming faces everywhere on the armor. Yeah. They float all over it.
Because
it's got to look so badass.
It's the trapped souls of everyone that he's now taken over, which has made him, by the way, a lot even nastier in combat because now he is, not only can he not die, but if you kill him, you actually give yourself one of the worst deaths imaginable.
And you juice him up in his power level.
Yeah, it's, Lucius is cool. New rules. I mean, the Codex is behind me. They're fine.
Oh, he's jamming and he's so much better than you.
He is, but it's just the problem is when you tell a story like this, does it come?
I know, but he used to be terrible.
Oh, he was.
Lucius on the board was not even worth bringing. It
wasn't even a cool model. I'll be honest with you. Like the old model, I didn't really care for. I'm literally looking up.
They've juiced everything up quite a bit now. He looks cool now, and they gave him some power level mojo.
All right, so he rerolls hits and wounds, and he has 10 attacks at strength 4 minus 1. sustained.
He's literally AP 3, damage 3.
Yeah, but that's 6 attacks. 6 attacks, precision, strength 8, AP 3, flat 3 damage. I mean, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
That rocks.
That will, yeah, I guess into a character is full at full rerolls to hit and wound. Yes. Yeah, you know,
invite
what?
First.
Yeah, invite first. Fine, fair enough. It's pretty good. All right, he's good now.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk now about, though, one of the most independent bodies, at least until very recently, in all of the Chaos factions, Fabius Bile. Fabius is actually funny to me because Fabius, at the very start of the Siege of Terra, just left. Like, straight up went, nah, and walked out. To the point where, so early, Fulgrim got pissed off, and Fulgrim put a price on his head because he was so mad that Fabius just would abandon him. So
he's being hunted by both
Loyalist
and traitor legions. And he basically just went from mad scientist laboratory to mad scientist laboratory doing weird shit. Yeah. And the better part is he kept outsourcing his work. He started contracting with all the other legions and went, I can make your guys better. What are you going to do to him? Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And
Fabius is,
you kind of made him better.
Well, Fabius is cool as hell because Fabius actually is a believer in the original Imperial truth. He didn't believe in chaos. Like, he knows it existed, but he's like, that's stupid power. Science is where it should be. Yeah. And what he does is he pursues mostly cloning technology to kind of master the world. The first thing he goes about in this cloning technology is recloning all the Primarchs. All 20 of them, but he doesn't do a very good job of it. We covered this in the Abaddon cast that, like, he actually created a Horus, and Abaddon beat the everling piss out of that Horus and killed it.
Abaddon also tracked down all the other
and murdered all of them, all but one.
And
one does escape. Yeah, and but they even need to talk about it that the other clones were like incredibly mutated, which makes sense because they were all made of warp. You can't clone warp. You can clone genes, but you can't clone warp. And so Fabius, after this little one, goes, yeah, that doesn't work, and throws it in the garbage and decides instead to perfect humanity. And he makes something new called the Homo Novus, or new man. And I hate the name, but I love what he does with it. So Fabius and his retinue. Ugh.
I've got this. Fabius's retinue leave the Eye of Terror and become traveling the galaxy. But I love how they do this because they start going to settlements, telling everybody that they're healers and scientists, and they can help push forward the advancement and the well-being of the citizens of this planet.
Yeah. And so all the citizens will say, sure, this is great. And he injects them with his special serum. And this turns them into new men. These new men are massively stronger, massively more intelligent than regular humans, and puts them on par with space marines almost. But it's Bile.
Wait a second. I think that serum might have had some bad stuff in it too.
Yep.
Because it super pumps up your greed, your hatred, your violence. Mm-hmm. It takes everything that's bad and times by 100 in all of these super juiced up guys.
It makes an entire species of supervillains, is how I look at it. Like, that's like they're all over, and an entire populace turned into space marine level strength supervillains. So, this to me reminds me.
And he keeps like leaving too. The best part is he does this to everybody.
Yeah.
And then he just mic drops and just cruises away.
Well, because he leaves before you see the bad stuff. It's a bit of a trope because it comes up a lot in fantasy where some like evil merchant comes to town and he brings like plying wares, and everyone who buys from the merchant, it's actually cursed. And that's what he's doing. And so these new men, appear, they're massively strong, they're massively intelligent, but fast forward within a few weeks, let alone a few months, and they all become kind of mini dictators that you can't do very much about because they can murder anyone who gets anywhere near them, and they're also light years intelligent. So one of the fun stories about this is that the Inquisition spends a lot of their time tracking these things down because exterminating the planet will work to a point, but they're so intelligent that a lot of them can escape. And then they can get somewhere else where they can, if it's more than a couple of them, I assume they can breed, because they call them new man, but I think it's not gender specific, if I'm being honest, it's not clear.
He just juices up the populace.
That's my thing. So I think it becomes like Geesler cult. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes, the best part about Fabulous in this is he keeps going world to world, trying a new version of what he's doing.
Yeah. He's always trying to, he's aware that it doesn't work correctly, but he's totally fine with just testing it out.
Yeah, he's like, test 1,203. Okay, let's do it.
Oh, crap. One thing we forgot to mention. Sorry, guys. Now that we mentioned that, the reason this is important, about to become very important. Fabius is such a master of genetics because he is cursed genetically. His lifespan's very, very short because he basically just decays as a human being. So what he
is pretty crazy.
Yeah. So what he does is he clones himself constantly, and then he's able to transfer his consciousness into these clones and he keeps them all in a lab. And at first, whenever he would die, he would flip into one of his clones. But now he's actually able to transfer his consciousness almost in an instant. So he's becoming less of an immortal and more of a perpetual. Because no matter if you kill him, he just pops up somewhere else randomly.
And he's also, and he's got labs across the galaxy.
Exactly. So over the past 10 plus millennia, Bile has risen. And there's actually some cool stories about this where he killed Bile. And then like you fast forward like a month or two later, he's fighting in some sort of gladiatorial event and he looks over and he sees Bile in the stands just waving at him. And he's like, I physically stood over his dead body. I know I killed him. And it begins within the Inquisition, because I don't think the Inquisition even knows he can do this. They're trying to figure out, is there more than one Bile? You know, who are we killing? Because what they think is they're killing clones or stand-ins or whatever it is, or body doubles. But in reality, they are actually killing him, but then he is being arisen elsewhere all over the place.
And he's perfecting his craft, or giving the air quotes right now. The other legions pay for him, but one of the bigger things is a lot of apothecaries have left their legions to come work with Bile because as messed up as he is cutting edge. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why we have an entire faction called Creations of Bile.
Yep. And let's talk about them for a little bit. Because, over the last 10 millennia, 10 plus millennia, Bile has risen from this, like, side figure to a full-blown leader. And Brad's thing to talk about is called the Consortium. It's a bunch of apothecaries who come together, and they formed what's almost a mini-legion. Like Fabius Bile is part of the Emperor's Children, but the Creations of Bile, for a while, I actually think weren't even. I think in the new codex they are now, but I think they were independent.
He could show up in any... He used to be able to take one unit that Fabius Bile would buff up.
Yeah, and so these guys have traveled all around the galaxy kind of to working with Bile to get what he wants. And what Bile really, all he really wants is, people give me bodies so I can keep doing experiments. And in return, I'll give you technology that's either genetic technology. Also, he has a lot of weird weaponry too. That's all pretty gross. But let's talk about a couple of quick things that have come up with Bile recently. One of my favorite ones was when he went to Solemnes, which those who've read any of the Trazen books know that's where Trazen the Infinite lives. Very long story short there, he ends up trading to Trazen the Infinite his Fulgrim clone that somehow survived Abaddon's Purge, and the Harlequins who were trying to murder him. It's a pretty cool trade. He'd be like, oh, those guys over there who are trying to murder me, yeah. You take them and this big dude here, and in exchange, he gets back, I think it was like 18, enough gene seed to make like 18,000 new space marines. Original gene seed. So no one has this, obviously, except for Trazen. Cool as hell. Later, another fun...
Let's go. I'll say this is the cooler one. He rolls into Camarag and goes up to the Homoculuses, the Covens.
Yeah.
And just goes to the Coven of the 13 Scars and goes, hey, I want to apply for the intern position. Yeah. And they just teach him all that they know.
Well, they did like it, the cut of his jib. Let's call it a spade a spade. They were like, oh, this guy knows how to torture. Let's test it. I mean, I feel like the apprentice program to joining, you know, a homunculi coven is not I'd like to join the coven. You know, it's probably more like, let's see what you got. And they were like, wow, this guy can sew some flesh together. So while there with them, what his real goal wasn't just to learn to be a better torturer, it was to perfect his new men even better. And he gets to a point with the homunculi where he gets enough of that information and he stages a pretty big escape. This is, I think, around the, like, there's quite a few, he has three novels, by the way, guys. And he then escapes, causing a bunch of chaos behind him and gets pursued by them.
Don't spoil this one because the books are pretty decent.
Yeah, so I'm not good. Good point, Brad.
These are fairly new also.
These are all pretty new books. So Fabius Bile, for those who like to read, has three novels. And I'll be honest, I don't love the writing in them, candidly, but the stories are really good. There's some novels you read where you just kind of go, skip the paragraph, just calling a spade a spade, you know. But these ones are very, very, the stories are really good. And the end is really cool. The very end of the third
novel. I'll say the end makes it worth it in the third novel, though.
Well,
a lot of stuff goes on.
Yeah, and there's a lot, and they're novels that do a good job of kind of giving you some insight into some backstory of things that have happened. So yeah, Brad's got a good point. I don't want to ruin the end of what is probably, like, 20 hours of reading for people to be like, oh yeah, let's give this away. So anyway, it does end in a really cool way for Fabius Bile. But let's close out. Actually, it's going to be kind of a soft close here, guys, because I want to jump back into Fulgrim real quick. There's not much to really jump into yet. As we said,
he just came back. There's going to be a lot more lore. Emperor's Children book just came out. Fulgrim is back.
I'm literally holding the Emperor's Children codex. There's nothing. Yeah. I got this for this episode.
Yeah.
There's nothing in here on Fulgrim. New. Yeah.
I was so mad. I think we're getting a new tournament season by the time this comes out. It may or may not be out.
Yeah.
And they usually put forward in the lore. And I think we're going to get some more Fulgrim lore there because he is taking part in a lot of stuff going on right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's some, in the codex, I'm recording, I have it open in my hands. And I'll be honest, it's got some good stuff in here, but we haven't really discussed why Fulgrim has a model yet. As far as like the Warhammer hasn't discussed it yet. Because all we know about Fulgrim was that he was back in, hanging out. The only thing that he really did more recently was when Gilliman was resurrected. So, he did kill Gilliman. That was kind of a big part of his day. And that was his last kind of action within the Materium. After killing Gilliman, he goes and he hangs out. Once Gilliman's reborn, he does appear, but not physically. He actually telepathically speaks to Gilliman, telling him that he's going to watch and wait. And as when Gilliman makes a mistake, Fulgrim's going to come strike.
Yep. So this is, says when you're basically at your weakest and your most wanting,
yeah,
then I will be there.
I will be there. And now he has a model. So maybe, you know, again, maybe if you listen to this cast like 2026, you might be like, yeah, John, we've all read that book. I don't know why you're talking about this. We'll make a new cast by then. But that's all we really know. Fulgrim's back. He has a model, which means he's going to get a novel, if not two. That's kind of, it's hit me because the Lion got one novel, I think. Then Gilliman got multiple novels, but he deserves that. I don't know if more Tyrion, but they'll move the lore ahead a little bit, but I'm excited because bringing back the Emperor's Children, that's what Noise Marines are, which we haven't really covered here because it's like, I don't have anything else to talk about them. They have some kind of cool, unique models, which is awesome. They've got some very unique and cool rules, which are also really good.
Tormentors and the Infractors are all cool things, new models too.
Yeah, so it's a really good Legion.
Flawless Blades. There's a lot to talk about with the new units.
Yeah, I think from a competitive standpoint, they're a very interesting army. And painting in pink is always easy. So it's actually an easy color to layer on. So
fine. Tell them about what's happening.
Here we go. Did everyone hear Brad get sad? It's because Brad saw the bottom of the notes. So
I already read it.
All right. So next week, we are going to just start doing our sandcastle building. We're going to jump into Imperial Fists. People have been asking for a while. I've been saying, yeah, we'll do it. I wanted to do, some chaos. After this, we'll do the Imperial Fists. But we're also going to add to that the Black Templars, because can't do one without the other. So we're going to spend...
It's probably the most famous successor chapter.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think of successor chapters. I don't think there's anyone that would even, like, right? There's nobody even. Because the Black... The Black Templar have...
Maybe the Flesh Tears, but still not a...
But the Black Templar, I mean, I could have sworn they even had their own, like, a box. I'm pretty sure that they had...
They did.
Yeah.
They have their own box. They have their own book.
Oh, that's right. They have their own book, too. Yeah, so no one has that. There's no other successor chapter that got their own book. And not like the weird, like, supplement we got in 8th edition, random book. Like, they have legitimate books. They had one in 9th, they have another one in 10th. So we're going to be doing, starting off with Imperial Fists. Once we get to the end of Imperial Fists, then we'll move into Black Templars because they, you know, not really more than the same. But until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
Sky.
See you guys next week.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.